Hi, Michelle, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Very good to have you. We're going to have, I think, a topic to discuss that's, you know, it very much fits into that whole forbidden conversation title of the podcast. I think before we start, you know, so the topic we're going to be discussing is vaccine injury. But I think something that I think is really important to sort of disclose before we get into the meat of everything is this is not meant to be a statement on necessarily vaccines, whether they're effective or not effective, whether somebody should take one or not take one. But rather, you know, I think often people use these cases that come up and they build their own narratives around them. And, you know, I think that sometimes can be the worry around having these conversations. But at the same time, often we don't have these conversations, and yet people do have these experiences and can be gaslit as well, because they're told that, you know, they're making it up or it's not happening. Just like people, I think, are also, there's a huge a significant community of people who have, long-term effects from COVID, for example, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that I've heard as well. And I've sat in on some conversations in regards to that. And they kind of have the same kind of problem as well, interestingly enough.
They overlap a lot, yeah.
a lot of overlap there, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think where we kind of get, it can get kind of tricky is like, okay, how many of these vaccine injuries happen, you know, intentions and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's hard to sort of speculate on that. But we have your individual experience, which is also, you know, and I think that's really important to note, is documented. It's not just conjecture. And it's important for us to have these conversations because there are consequences for people in terms of that experience. You know, I'll disclose, even though I think it's, you know, people's private matter, whether they've had the vaccination or not, but just for the purpose and transparency of this podcast, you know, I have been vaccinated. I chose to do it at a time where it wasn't yet mandated. So it was a YOLO kind of situation, I thought. I looked at it, and, you know, my mom worked on the mRNA technology for cancer research. And, you know, we kind of looked at the facts and thought, okay, this is, you know, there are some risks involved, but also there were some strains going on at the time. I was exposed, I was teaching. So I've decided to do it. I did not, you know, I had some side effects that were pretty severe, actually, for a vaccine, but no long-term effects, hopefully.
Yeah.
But your situation is different. And I think it's important for us to sort of acknowledge that. And so with that whole preamble, which
it's important,
that
I totally
have
understand.
To do that.
yes, yeah. I get it. It's totally fine.
Well, I would love to just get a little bit of your perspective. And I think it might be, you know, good to sort of start a little earlier than, you know, your vaccine injury that, you know, I think we've spoiled the plot. So for anyone listening, we now know that that's what happened. But before, let's kind of go back to before that happened. You know, when the vaccines, you're based in Australia, you're a photographer. When the vaccines first come around and COVID is around, where's your head at? And what was going on with you when that was all going on?
Yeah, for sure. And just wanted to thank you for having this conversation. It's really important to me to have conversation with the right people that are not going to use this for their own agendas. And it's why I haven't spoken. I've only done a couple of chats about this because a lot of people actually have approached me and I can tell the angle that they're going for, and I'm not necessarily on board with that. So I love you and I love your writing and I love your podcast. So I'm really, really stoked to be on here. So thank you. Thanks for allowing the space. Yes. I live in Australia. I live in Melbourne, which is also, I think, really a big part of this conversation, because Melbourne had pretty much the longest lockdown in the world. I think maybe outside some places in China. And when we say lockdown, it wasn't just like, you know, 2 months of you can't go to work. This was very close to 2 years. So I think giving the context of what that feels like and the mindset that a lot of us were in and the fact that the vaccine was mandated in Australia. So you weren't actually able to do anything at all. I wasn't able to work. I'm a freelance photographer as well. So by that stage, you couldn't go to any establishment. You couldn't go to you had to show your vaccine passport essentially to go anywhere. Including if you just wanted to go out to a restaurant, if you wanted to. So it was very important to be double vaccinated, and it was not only, I guess, government mandated, but socially as well. The pressure for everybody to get vaccinated, for us to get our lives back, was something that I've just never felt in my entire life. And especially for the music industry, because our entire industry was shut down for 2 years. I'd just come off a world tour in 2019. So I'd been traveling the world. It really was a big career highlight for me. And then came back into not doing my job at all for 2 years inside my house. The only time we could leave the house was for 1 hour exercise a day or to get groceries. And only one person in your household could leave to get groceries as well. We also had a 9 p.m. curfew. We could not be out of the house for 9 p.m. And after 9 p.m., we also had a 5 kilometer radius. So you could not be outside your suburb. So I think a lot of the stuff that I get online, especially from people are just like, why did you take the vaccine? A lot of anti-vaxxers, we get hate from both sides. Anti-vaxxers, I'm sure, hate us, and really pro-vaccine people hate us as well. But a lot of anti-vaxxers are like, you know, we were trying to warn you. Why did you do this? You're a sheep, blah, 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 like all this stuff. I would say if you spoke to the majority of people in Australia, I don't even think we thought we had any type of choice. The vaccine rates in Australia was close to 97, 98%. In my state, in Victoria. It does differ outside because the laws are a little bit different. But in Victoria, my state, and especially in my city, it was extremely difficult to live your life if you were not vaccinated. Having said that, historically, I've been extremely pro-vaccine, extremely pro-science, very, very left-leaning, very much on board with what we needed to do to protect people. I think also Australians are generally very compliant, and a lot of people in America probably don't understand why we were locked down in Melbourne for so long. We honestly were doing what we thought was the right thing, and we were hammered with daily numbers of people dying, stories of people if someone died and they were 30 years old, we would hear about it on the news. We were just bombarded with, this is so dangerous. And because we're in lockdown, obviously, our numbers of COVID were so low. I remember being, this is a crazy story, but so we would go in and out of lockdowns as well. So we'd come out for a couple of weeks and then the numbers would go up and we would go back in. So our lives were just in limbo. We'd try and get a bit of normalcy and then we'd go back in lockdown. So the trauma, I don't like using the word trauma because it's so overused now, but the trauma of going in and out, it's something that still stays with us. It's we're constantly on edge here, I think. But I remember that there was one, we had to get to under an average of 10 cases per day to come out of lockdown. So this is in a city of 6 million people. We had to, and we were all watching the television this one day. This was very late towards maybe our fifth lockdown maybe. And I'm watching the television because there was a daily news report with our premier that said, how many cases did we have? Were we allowed out today? And he said, he came out and there used to be this meme in our city. If he was wearing a suit, it was bad news. And if he was wearing a North Face jacket, it was we could relax. He came out in the suit and we're all oh my God, it's bad news. And he said, we didn't meet the average. I think we had 15 cases that day. And that's cases,
not deaths. Like
cases.
Yeah, in a not city hospitalizations, of 6 million people. Cases.
No.
Wow.
Cases. So I remember just like dropping to my knees and just bawling. Just like, I don't know when we're going to be out of this. It felt like this never ending groundhog day of just a nightmare. And, you know, obviously I'm in a privileged position where I didn't have to worry about money because the government was paying us to stay home. That was one thing that happened. It was that they did that very well in Australia. So, and we're getting paid well. So I wasn't worried about money.
How much was it?
I think it was $750 a week.
Okay.
So yeah. So, $2,500, I think, a month or something. So, you know,
okay.
Like obviously not as much as that I would make if I was working, but enough to keep the mortgage, you know.
Yeah. I mean, in Canada, we had $2,000 Canadian a month.
Yeah. So I think it was like $2,500 maybe Australian dollars. So it was, you know, more than enough to survive. You know, we're not out. And we're also not doing anything. So it's like, you know, what are you doing with your money? You're ordering Uber Eats maybe, and that's about it. You're not literally not doing anything. And I know this, it's different for different people. So my husband and I, we're both self-employed. So we did qualify for a slightly, and we've got businesses. So we qualified for a slightly higher bracket. There was also a lower bracket that still was, it wasn't as much as that, but it might've been like, I don't know, maybe just under $2,000, I think. So there was different levels as well. So, you know, by the time the vaccines roll around, people are just desperate to get their lives back. And there was a lot of campaigns and a lot of advertising around, if you just get vaccinated, this is the ticket out. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and socially everyone was, it was the only thing that people were asking about. It was like, when are you getting vaccinated? It was like extremely, like there was a lot of pressure. I listened to a lot of different podcasts from a lot of different people. And I definitely had heard some podcasts that were questioning the safety of the mRNA vaccines. However, one of the other vaccines in Australia, AstraZeneca, was causing blood clots and had caused maybe 2 or 3 deaths in Australia. So there was a lot of hesitancy around AstraZeneca. And AstraZeneca, I don't think you had in the US, but they had that in the UK. That was the main one that they had in the UK. And my husband and I, we're over 40. So we qualified for Pfizer a little bit earlier. So we were actually stoked because we were like, okay. And we hadn't heard any bad things really about Pfizer at that point. Other than, like I said, I had started to listen to a few podcasts and like there was a few, I definitely had a little bit of a question mark on how quickly it had rolled out and these particular stories of people that I really respected and had listened to for a long time that were raising questions. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So what my husband and I decided to do was to, we had originally booked in for July and we just pushed it back to September. So we just waited a couple of months. We were still in lockdown. So we just kind of waited as long as possible. Friends by that point had started being vaccinated. Nobody had dropped dead. Everyone was fine. So by the time September rolled around, and it was really getting to the point where you couldn't go in, like you really needed to get that vaccination status to do anything. And for me, I really wanted to start touring again. I wanted to open my studio again. I wanted to get on the road again. I wanted to do all of those things again. My job for me, it's not a job. I feel it's like my purpose. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really feel like this is what I'm meant to be doing. It feeds my soul. It gives me so much joy. And to not do that for 2 years was soul destroying. So,
and the big thing is when people talk about, you know, you have a choice, It's like, well, yes. You didn't really have that choice because you either, you know, you lose your, well, job livelihood, but also job, your passion.
My passion and life.
The thing that you love, what feeds your soul, what makes you kind of go on. And then on top of that, like you said, the vaccine passports, well, you couldn't go almost anywhere. I assume you can maybe go to the grocery store.
Grocery store, I believe, yes. Even though I think that might have become, but later on, maybe they started asking. I could be making that up. I could be remembering that wrong. But grocery store, and also, you know, if you got desperate, you could always like get stuff delivered. But it was more like,
but you were kind of cut off from everything. And I knew
everything.
You couldn't go on an airplane. Yeah. You couldn't leave the country. So all of those things became, you know, couldn't visit people in the hospital. You might not even be able to get treatment. So like you were so cut off that it's like not really a choice. Ultimately.
That's exactly right. That's what I feel like when I hear that. I'm like, you know, you had a choice. And I'm like, but did we? I mean, I feel like it was, and yeah, I mean, maybe for people that don't love their jobs as much, or it doesn't really, it is everything to me. Like, I can't really overstate that. In that, it is everything. I found it really late in my life, and it just, it means everything to me. So it was just really hard not to be able to do that. And so by that point, September, I was like, okay. We're
going to
do this.
So once you did, when did you experience the reaction to it? Was it from the first shot or the second shot?
It was from the first shot, and it was about 4 days in. The first sign for me was just some very weird, off balance feeling, dizziness. And then what was most alarming was really extreme chest pain, which I'd never experienced this before. Very like stabbing chest pain. And so I had messaged a friend of mine who's a nurse, and she just said, look, if you're concerned, I would just go to the hospital. And by that time, I think we started to hear some stuff about myocarditis and pericarditis, but it was all, you know, it's a thing that young men should look out for and that sort of stuff. So I wasn't overly concerned about it, but I was aware of it, I think. Not overly aware, but just like aware that some people had that issue. When I went to the hospital, I was seen pretty quickly. They did a couple of tests. They basically said to me, you know, you don't fit the profile of what we're seeing. And a doctor pulled me aside, like when they were kind of discharging me, and said, you know, there's a lot of anxiety around COVID at the moment and vaccines, and you really need to get your second vaccination. Like, he was kind of like almost chastising me. And I thought that was very strange, because I was like, it wasn't like that I was not considering it. I was just obviously in immense distress at that point. And
so he made it sound like it was in your head from how you're describing 100%. It.
Yeah. Like very much like, this is just anxiety and you need to get your second vaccination. It's very, he was like, COVID is very dangerous. And I was like, I know that. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it was almost like thought you were trying to get out of getting your second shot.
Yeah. It was very strange. And it kind of threw me, to be honest. But anyway, I left after that, and those symptoms were kind of coming and going to differing extents for the next couple of weeks. And we had a 3-week gap between when our first one was supposed to happen and our second one. So by the time the third week rolled around, things had kind of settled down. Like one thing I was having in the middle of the night, I was having like panic attacks. Like it was almost like I was stuck in fight or flight, and little things could set me off. Like I'd get to sleep okay. I was having a pounding heart that was very hard to sleep, pounding and just chest pain. And then I'd get to sleep, and if I got up in the night, say to go to the bathroom or something, to come back to sleep would often trigger a panic attack. It was really strange. I couldn't work out why. But by the third week, it was kind of starting to die down. And also I was like, well, I just need to do this because once I get the second one, then I can kind of live my life again. So like a lot of people were like, why did you go back? But I guess, again, with the context of what we were living in, and you kind of really had to. And by that third week, things were starting to, it felt like they were starting to dissipate, not completely, but I was like, well, I guess I just need to get my second one. And that was probably the biggest mistake of my life. I was,
well, it's interesting
when all hell broke loose.
You had that shorter break, and then in the US they had the shorter break. In Canada, mm-hmm. they had a shortage at a certain point. So they kind of said, oh, well, it's better to have the gap. So it's so you had even more of a chance of like maybe getting, you know, getting better maybe. And
recovering and then, yeah. Although having said that, like a lot of people that did react badly to the first and then went back, even for to the second, to the third, if there's been some type of reaction, usually the next time has made it worse. Anecdotally from what I've seen in support groups, it's like even if the reaction wasn't that bad, the third one might have brought on a really cascade of awful events. So that's a common
some people
story.
I know, weirdly enough, like had no real reactions to the two shots, and then the boosters had much more significant.
That's a really common story again in support groups. Totally fine with the first two, and then they come even fourth sometimes, like they're which is, you know, a part of why I want to do these conversations is like we need to know why is this happening to some people and some not, because like I feel like that's an important thing to understand. And after that second one, it was about the same amount of time. It was what I would just describe as hell on earth. Just constant. I was having 6 or 7 panic attacks a day. If I would eat something, I would have a panic attack. I'd have a supplement, I would have a panic attack. I would try and sleep and then get up and have a panic attack. Like anything that was made my body go from one state to the next was triggering some type of just response, and I did not know what to do with myself. I went to hospital quite a few times. The second time, I had a really, really lovely doctor actually who said, you know, we're seeing a lot of people after Pfizer. We don't really know why. He was like really honest with me. He said, you know, your tests are coming up fine. But obviously you're in distress, and basically he was saying, we don't really have the right tools to understand what's happening. All we can do is send you to your GP and to get, you know, further tests done. Which was, you know, comforting at the time. He was saying they were seeing 10 to 15 people a night at that stage is what he told me after Pfizer. Oh, wow.
And were they getting similar symptoms? Like, yes. Were they getting panic attacks?
A lot of chest pain, panic attacks, just that real distress. And he was just like, we don't really understand why, but, you know, this is what we're doing. We're just kind of sending them to their GP and then get some more tests, go to see a cardiologist or whoever you need to see. And then the third time I went to the hospital was probably my worst experience in that I didn't actually, so I'd been to the same hospital within, you know, a span of a couple of weeks. So I, you know, I can see from the outside, potentially I looked like a crazy person.
Right.
But you know, this, and also for context again, I'm never sick. Mm-hmm. I think I've been to hospital once before in my life. Like, I'm not a person that just rocks up. I'm also, I have a lot of pride around being well, or as like, I don't like to show signs of weakness. So for me to go to hospital is a really big deal. Like, it's just not, so I don't want to admit when I'm not doing well, or, you know, not coping, I think is probably the right word. So the third time I went to hospital, I was doing a stream. I was streaming on Twitch at that point. And all of a sudden I was just getting these stabbing chest pains to the point where I had to stop the stream. I just said, hey, I've got to go. And I just took myself straight to hospital, and it was terrifying. It was the worst experience that I'd had. It was really scary, like gripping, stabbing, like feel like I'm dying of a heart attack. And mm-hmm. I got into a bed pretty quickly, but I didn't get to see a doctor that day. They didn't do any tests. And a nurse practitioner came to see me, and she said, we've seen you 3 times now. I don't know what you expect us to do for you. I think you should see a therapist for your anxiety issues. And I was just like, I'm hysterically crying, thinking that I'm dying.
Right.
And this lady's telling me that basically you're a crazy lady and can you please get out of our hospital? And she just sent me away.
And was anything showing up for them at all on their, right? So from their perspective, I guess.
Yeah, she didn't do any test on that day, but in fairness, and this is actually a common story with a lot of vaccine injured, is that my cardiologist now has said they don't really understand why this is the case, but she said to me, it's almost like we don't have the right tests, but a lot of us initially were not showing up with the traditional tests that they were doing in hospital. I don't know why. I don't know why I wasn't showing up that I had pericarditis when I did. It didn't show up in any of those original tests. It had to be diagnosed by a cardiologist later on. So I don't know the answer to that. I'm obviously not a doctor. I'm a photographer. The story is common.
Do you feel like
it was anxiety?
They were part of the reason for the diagnosis of anxiety was because, you know, they thought that was being tied to vaccine, and they wanted, like, they saw that as being like somebody over exaggerating or just didn't want to admit that.
I'm not sure. I know a lot of people in the vaccine injured community would say that they didn't want to admit it. I don't know what the answer to that is. Like I said, that the second doctor I had was really lovely and very candid and open with me, and that, you know, they'd seen a lot of people. They didn't really understand why. You know, my cardiologist now, I've got an amazing cardiologist, and she said the same thing. You know, there was so much, it was such a weird time, you know, in fairness to all of these people that were working in, you know, a time that we've never seen before, and so much stress and pressure. And then added on, you get all of this influx of people that are coming in, and they're not showing up in the normal tests. They don't know why. I don't really know the answer to that. I guess the thing that's strange is that a lot of us have the exact same story, that we were told it was anxiety and that we were sent away. And then further, you know, months down the track, we are then diagnosed with something more serious. So I don't know the reasons for that. And I don't like to speculate because I don't like to go down those pathways. I don't think it serves me personally and my journey to get better either, to speculate. But experience.
That's very fair. And I think there is a tendency to sort of ascribe motives that we don't necessarily have that evidence for, where it's like, oh, this is what they were told to do, or this, the answer is just simply maybe they just didn't know better, right? Because they maybe weren't seeing these symptoms previously, so they weren't familiar with that. Yeah,
it's just, I guess it's frustrating when you are in these communities and worldwide people are sharing the same story. I understand why people go down the pathway to start to ascribe motive, because the stories are just so similar. I could tell you, you know, I know so many people that have an identical story to me. And even if they weren't diagnosed with the more serious thing like me, like pericarditis or myocarditis, they're diagnosed with something else, like a dysautonomia or a POTS or I also have mast cell activation syndrome now, which is super weird, and like a lot of doctors don't even know about it, and it's like stuff that is tricky, I guess. And for ER doctors especially, you know, I think in their defense, if you're not showing up with anything that looks like you're dying in the immediate future, I guess they do need to kind of move you on.
Right.
But it's just, I guess what's disappointing is that type of language around just feeling like you're crazy. And when I was, you know, in the most distress I've ever been in my life, was just really disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a, unfortunately, I think there's a lot of harm that kind of also gets done by, you know, because there is a lot of people who I do think are fairly described as conspiracy theorists or people who just go a little bit too far into the deep end, versus there are people who are also reasonable and have valid concerns, but they all, because of the more extreme group, they all kind of get lumped together, and then the concerns of the real concerns of people do get ignored or get ascribed the same way. And so I think that happened a lot during the pandemic and still happening now, obviously. And so, you know, a lot of people's concerns end up getting ignored because they're lumped together and people just immediately dismiss them unless it happens to them.
That's definitely been my experience of when I tried to talk about it online as well. And, you know, there's a lot to this story after trying to get, like, my GP tried to just to prescribe me with anti-anxiety medication because I was telling her I was having these panic attacks. And I guess that was the only tool that she had, was to try and prescribe me with, you know, anti-anxiety. And I was just flat out refused to do that because to me it was like something is causing this that's quite acute. I'm not going on something else that's masking a problem. And it was just frustrating to, I guess, not be heard. And it wasn't really until I started seeing a naturopath, which in itself you could say that, and a lot of people will dismiss that, you know, not being, you know, that being anti-science or whatever. But as soon as I started seeing my naturopath, like, everything changed for me. Like, you know, I started getting better. I started seeing improvements. She totally believed me. She was seeing a lot of people like me. And whatever she told me to do, I would do, and I would start seeing improvement immediately. So when you're in that type of distress, you would do whatever it takes to feel better. and it, for me, it definitely wasn't going on anti-anxiety medication. I started an anti-inflammatory diet probably 4 or 5 weeks in and immediately stopped the panic attacks, especially the panic attacks I was getting from eating and consuming stuff. So that alone helped. And that's one of the biggest things we've seen in the injured community too, is like those types of really basic things like anti-inflammatory diets, breath work, meditation, those things are actually really working for people. Stuff that I probably would have just thought was woo if you had have told me this 3 years ago. I'm like, it works for me and I feel normal again after 6 months of every day not feeling normal. So you kind of do whatever you can to feel that type of normality. But like my experience with telling my story online was pretty awful because it was hate from both sides. So yeah, like I said, the anti-vaxxers were just like, you know, you're a fucking idiot. Why did you do that? We tried to warn you. Or the pro-vax people were like, you know, shut the fuck up. Like, you're killing grandma with, you know, you're putting people off getting these vaccines. You're killing people with your rhetoric. Like, this is the most, like, just the two extremes. And like, I've had to mute, like, some of my stuff's gone like semi-viral when I've talked about it, or someone has retweeted me that it's got into some dark side of the web.
Right.
And especially when you're not well, like, you just can't cope with that. Like, I just had to just mute, and it's not helpful to your healing process if you're getting all of this external hate and stress and you're trying to just find information, feel better. But like, you know, the internet for us, for as a community, has been our saving grace. Like, that is where we found the people and the help when nobody was helping us. And I think one of the most frustrating things for me was like reading the Twitter files that came out that was talking specifically about, you know, conversations that is going against the narrative around vaccines. Like, we were saying that for so long that, I mean, I was legacy verified on Twitter for a long time, and you kind of know how many people see your things. And anytime I tried to talk about this originally, it's just like nobody's into it. Yep. And you're just like, okay, this kind of feels like I'm being shadow banned. I know I don't like using that word because it's, you know, conspiracy. And then when the Twitter files came out, I was like, we knew that. We knew that our conversation was being suppressed. We knew that our Facebook groups were being removed in a time of absolute desperation, where people were so desperate for help. And, you know, there's a community of people that are just like, any little bit of information that they can get from a doctor that might be forthcoming that will give you a little bit of information, or someone in this country said this will work. And those groups that were getting shut down at that time, I just, it's unconscionable to me that that was a conscious decision that they made to shut down those conversations.
Right, to protect you. Right.
to apparently protect us. Like, there's literally people that committed suicide because they were shut off at a time that they needed help. And I just, nobody knows about this stuff. Like, nobody knows that these people were so desperate that they would just, like, these groups were our lifeline, like, quite literally. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I understand the argument from the other side, where it's like, okay, there's probably some really bullshitty things that were also being shared, right? And things that might even cause harm, because, you know, you take this as much as it's like natural, you know, maybe taking this natural supplement that's like, it could also cause harm, right? But then the problem is like, you start deciding what's real, what's true, what's not, that becomes a problem. But what bothered me on top of that, even more than the Twitter files, I'd say, is when it came out that Facebook was actually taking down real information that they knew and acknowledged to be truthful information. And, you know, because it would create vaccine hesitancy. So this kind of idea that we don't have domain of our own choices because somebody else knows better and wants to control that.
Yeah, and I think, like, this is why I understand why people have gone so far down the rabbit holes, because when you hear these things, it doesn't make sense. It's like, why would they do that? Why are they taking down information that is real and factual and that now has been proven? It doesn't make sense. And that's when people start questioning the motive, and that's when people start going down those rabbit holes. You now have a whole cohort of people that were extremely pro-vaccine, that took the vaccine, that have been damaged in some way, that are now saying they will never take another vaccine in their life. They will never get their children vaccinated. They won't get their pets vaccinated. Like, this might sound crazy to people, but when you've gone through this experience, I can tell, like, I have medical trauma. Like, I had to go for just a routine thing the other day where they told me on the spot that I had to have something done that I wasn't expecting. And I was just like, just my whole world. I was just like, what? I'm not prepared for this. Like, I could tell that it's like, this is a lasting effect that I'm going to have to deal with now.
You know? And that's a very sad reality, because I think we certainly need that trust in the institutions in order to function as a society, right? Those vaccines are important. Those
extremely important.
And that trust in the medical system. And most of the time it does good by us. However, that distrust, I do understand why people have gone that way. It's like, how do you regain that trust? Because that is so fundamentally important. And we can't live like this in this kind of level of distrust.
We can't if we start seeing diseases that have been eradicated that are coming back. Like, you know, this is the repercussions of this. This is why this conversation is really important. Whatever you think about vaccines, whatever you think about for and against, whatever you think about, like, the arguments, like, people are always putting forward the numbers and how rare it is and downplaying all of the main thing that the one that really frustrates me is they say that, oh, but if you get pericarditis or myocarditis, it's mild and it's quick, you're quick to recover. We haven't seen that in the community. I'm now 18 months in, I still can't exercise. I still can't do, I can't work at, you know, the same rate that I could before. I have to do a number of things every day just to be normal. And this is a very common story. Like, people that suffer these things, it's ongoing. It is not mild. It's extremely serious. Myocarditis, if you get that, the chance of you dying in the next 5 years is like 50%. Like, these are real statistics that are just being, oh, but it's like, if you get it, it's mild. I'm just like, every time I hear this, I'm like, are you insane? like,
well, the other counter they'll say, the other counter they'll say is like, well, if you get COVID, you know, that also has its own risk. 1,000%.
And if you have had a vaccine injury and then you get COVID, the chance of a relapse. So it's not a for or against argument now. You're actually saying that we're going to get repeat infections our whole life, and every time we're putting ourselves at risk of a relapse or a heart complication or something, all of that, there's so many complications from these mRNA vaccines that go from just what I've talked about, but there's all kinds of like numbness and tingling and neuropathy and burning all over your body and weird menstrual issues and you know, same thing happens with COVID as well. But my whole argument is, this isn't a for and against argument. It's like, every time that you're seeing either COVID or the vaccine, either one, it's like you're putting an extra layer of risk and complications for the next time. So I just am saying that we need to have more information about why this is happening. Are we just expecting people to just get repeat doses? And like I said to you, you know, some people were totally fine with their first, second, third, and then they come after the fourth, they're coming into the injured community. So why is that? Why is there no conversation or study or anything around what is happening to us? Why is that happening? I've put in an official report with the TGA in Australia, which is our safety governing body. I haven't been followed up. They haven't asked me how I'm doing. They haven't. And that is the same story with everyone that I know in the community. They're not following us up. So how is science being done here? I am a science person. I want these to be safe for people. I'm not saying get rid of these. I'm saying COVID is going to be with us. We want to be as safe as possible. We need to understand and study why this is happening. This is science. Like, what is going on here? Why do we not know why this happened to us? Why do we not? Now I can't get another vaccine, so I'm just exposed to COVID for the rest of my life. I don't think that's ideal. I think that's awful. So, like, yeah. Where do we sit now with this? Like, it's just this big question mark. It's like, all right, well, I guess the whole thing for me is, like, we've just been completely abandoned. We did exactly what the government told us to do. We did the quote-unquote right thing. And when something happened, it was like, you're on your own. Catch you later. Like, I hope, you know, we don't qualify for any, you know, government incentive, what's it called when they give you a payout for injured people? Like, there's a few of those in place, but like 99% of people don't qualify. I don't qualify, even though I've had one of the most serious reactions, because I didn't actually spend a night in hospital. So you have to have spent, like, there's all these like weird loopholes.
Right.
So
sure.
I can't get any money.
Yeah, and the vaccine companies don't have any liability either. So
liability, exactly. So, you know, I might have spent, I don't even know how much money I would have spent trying to feel normal, but there's no way that I can, I guess, recoup that money. Time that I've had to have off work. When I had a relapse in September, I had to have 6 or 6 to 8 weeks off work. I'm a freelancer. So, you know, it was funny because my cardiologist, she saw me recently and she said, you know, you've got better. See, like, rest works. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But I'm self-employed. So, like, I can't just rest every time I have a relapse. Like, this is not long-term. This is
sustainable.
Not something. Yeah, this is not sustainable, exactly. So
yeah,
I'm just trying to have a reasonable conversation to try and highlight where I see the issues. And
well, at the very least, we should be looking for those answers. And like you said, I mean, even the fact that, so even I had, but I'm very, like, most people I've talked to have had a reaction of some sort to the shot. So, you know, I had brain, I had a massive headache, like just, and brain, what's it called?
Brain fog?
Brain fog, but really, like, I've never experienced anything like this. But it went away. And then I've had, and then I had a headache that lasted for the second shot that lasted several days. So I've never had anything like that with a shot, like any shot that I've ever taken. I've taken all my shots. Yeah, so
totally.
That is very unusual. Same. So just to know the answer to that, like why is that happening? And why is that happening pretty much to almost every single person that I've talked to has had that. You know,
I've had a lot. It's the same experience now. Obviously, I talk about this a lot, and in Australia, probably one of the more high profile people here in terms of those that are talking about it. And a lot of people, you know, tell me their stories. And yeah, most people have had some type of experience that was unusual. That, you know, for and same with me. I've had every vaccine under the sun before this, and I've never had. I never had a reaction before. So, and that's why I knew something was extremely wrong very quickly. Like, I have never felt like this. And it took me so long to feel normal again. And then once I did feel normal, I went back to, I'm cured. I'm like, I go back to 100%. And then I had a huge relapse, and it was extremely awful and traumatic, because then it was like, oh, is this my life now? Because I thought that once I healed, I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm like, I'm back to normal. And now it was, is this like a chronic illness thing? Am I now having to change my entire life around like what it is to live with this type of, these types of symptoms, and what can happen to me? What type of, I guess if the pericarditis flares up, what that feels like and how I have to exist in the world and what I'm not able to do, which includes touring and includes all the stuff that I love. It's very confronting. Like my last relapse happened when I was in America. I've got my O-1 visa, so I can come to America to work. And I was over there working for a couple of, I think it's like 6 weeks, and I couldn't walk a flight of stairs. I was in New York and I could not walk stairs. Can I tell you how confronting that is? Wow. You can't even go to a restaurant because all the bathrooms are downstairs.
Wow.
So it was like,
I walk downstairs either, but that's just because I'm out of here.
So yeah, I mean, and you know, I've been extremely fit my whole life. I've played, you know, competition level basketball into my 40s. It was part of my identity to be fit, to be healthy, to play sport. And I can't do that anymore.
I see the Adidas shirt. Yeah.
See?
Definitely part of your identity. Yeah.
It is. It's part, it always has been, you know, like I was the basketball girl. That was how I identified at high school. Like that was what I was good at. So, you know, it might sound really like, oh, you know, it's just not being able to exercise. A lot of people are like, well, that's great. Like for me, that's
now, yeah, now you have an excuse.
Yeah, no, now you have an excuse to not do anything. Yeah. But I, you know, I'm slowly building up my tolerance, baby steps. It's painfully slow. I'm at the moment lifting 3 kilogram weights. Like it's embarrassing to me. It's like, you know, these tiny little weights, and I will be, have to be really careful that I don't push myself too far. I've just started doing like push-ups on my knees again, like baby levels. Just started doing squats, body weight squats, like really stuff that I would have laughed at 3 years ago. I was at the fittest of my life.
Yeah, I need to work up to your level.
Yeah. Well, during COVID, I got so fit because we couldn't do anything. I was just like running up and down stairs and, you know, it was just boxing and doing all this stuff at home.
The thing during COVID is closing the gyms, but
I know, it was wild.
I also found COVID like really interesting because I didn't, I mean, where I was, it wasn't it wasn't great. It was definitely very restrictive, but not quite as bad as I found out what Quebec was. That was more like Australia. I had no idea. Yeah. It's funny. We had no idea that that's what was going on there even. So like when I found out, it's like, oh my God, you have curfew. I was hearing things about Australia. So I knew that Australia was really restrictive, but I didn't know that was going on in my own backyard. So
I remember there was a Twitter, there was like a hashtag, Australia has fallen at one point.
But I think they had that for
they had, like, because we had police in the streets, and there was photos, people would get fined if you were out late, and so there was lots of and we also had a quarantine camp in the Northern Territory, which I actually experienced. So at one point I needed to go, this is before the vaccination issue, this was 2020, I needed to go to Sydney to do some work because Sydney was open, but the border between Melbourne and Sydney, so the state border, was closed, and Victoria and Sydney, New South Wales, the state, was not letting anyone in from our state. So you could not pass, you couldn't get from one side to the other. So we had to go to the Northern Territory. We had to fly to the NT, which is right up north where the quarantine camp was. We had to quarantine for 2 weeks just to get into Sydney to work for 10 days and then go home.
Oh, gosh.
So I had actually experienced that quarantine camp, and it was crazy because I went with four of my colleagues who I hadn't seen for like 6 months, and we were in this like one kind of section, like there was like four rooms together and you shared a porch, and it was it was really weird because it actually was the most social and free that I'd felt in 6 months because I could see my friends and we could hang out on the porch and talk. And I remember reading stuff on Twitter. I didn't have to pay. I work for an artist and their record label paid for us to all go, so I didn't have to pay for it.
In Canada, we had this where, but you stayed in a hotel for...
Yeah, we had that here too. Yeah. Okay. So depending on what state you were in, Melbourne had that and New South, like Sydney had that. This particular state had like a camp, and they were calling it like a concentration camp on Twitter. Like there's all these right-wing people saying that we were in concentration camps. And there was definitely some people that were sending videos and playing up like how bad it was. It was actually pretty comfortable, I won't lie. Like they would feed us. Okay. We could exercise and chat to other people. And, you know, I mean, like you hear, I'm sure that people in America are hearing this and saying you are crazy for saying this is comfortable. But having said that, like we did come from, I didn't see any of my friends for like 6 months, so I could see them. And I don't know, for me, that was just like such a privilege. It was great.
It's almost a loophole in the whole plan.
It was like we were on holidays. Also, Northern Territory has amazing weather at that time of the year. So it was like beautiful, hot. I was sunbaking, getting a great tan. And then we go into Sydney and I got to work for the first time in forever. Like I was living my best life. Then we came back into Melbourne into lockdown. I was like, I think about it now and I'm like, why didn't I just stay in the Northern Territory? I
don't know. Right, forever.
I don't know.
In quarantine camp.
I mean, I definitely could have stayed in Darwin or something. Like, I don't know why I went back to Melbourne. I mean, my husband and my dogs were there, obviously, that's why.
We should have just
you couldn't even, once they closed the border, though, you couldn't drive over the border. So we were kind of stuck. If I didn't fly back, I would be by myself. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, you eventually were, you're one of the few people who were actually able to get a piece of paper that says that your condition is due to the vaccine. Can you talk a little bit, explain how that came to be? Like,
sure.
Was it difficult to get?
Yeah. I had to see a couple of different cardiologists. I saw a GP, an amazing GP, who she diagnosed me with POTS and MCAS, which is kind of, POTS falls in the dysautonomia camp, which dysautonomia affects actually a lot of people post-vaccine, and I would say actually a lot of people post-COVID. And dysautonomia is when all of the regular, automatic things in your body don't work properly. So heart rate, blood pressure, you can have like GI, like stomach issues as well with that. Temperature, you can have weird fluctuations. You can't regulate temperature. Anything that happens automatically goes out of whack. And it's, like I said, very common for vaccine injured and for post-COVID. A lot of long COVID sort of stuff falls under this sort of, it's also like a post-viral thing. So a lot of people, you know, traditionally post-flu, for example, could have suffered from something like dysautonomia. But the symptoms are kind of all over the place and maybe a bit difficult to diagnose, I think, for some doctors. And mast cell activation syndrome, which I have, and I've probably had all of my life, but the vaccine triggered it to a point where I was basically, that's why I was having those panic attacks. They were actually an anaphylaxis reaction that I was having to food. I was basically allergic to everything. So just to explain, I didn't explain that before, but the vaccine triggered this syndrome that I have that basically made me allergic to everything. So I was like, great. It was great. It was great. I was, yeah. So you know, I've got that under control now and thankfully not allergic to everything now, which is great. But that's also, I think there was some study that was done that was, I think it's something like 20% of people that are vaccine injured have probably had this mast cell issue, and that's why they've reacted badly. So it causes all kinds of issues. When you look up the diagram, it's like it can be like stomach issues again, anxiety, neuropathy, like all kinds of issues. And it's basically your immune system is just like kind of fighting itself, and it's like an autoimmune thing essentially. My GP had diagnosed me with that, and then she referred me to a new cardiologist because the first cardiologist was very dismissive and they were like, you know, you don't fit the profile, you're in your 40s, you're a woman, blah blah blah. And the tests were not showing up. Also, I was kind of far away from the acute injury by then. So when I saw my second cardiologist, she did I think a stress echo, which I was fine with. I went back to see her after my relapse and was just explaining my symptoms. And she just said, this is just in line with everything that we're seeing with this post-vaccine pericarditis. So she's like, I'm happy to diagnose you from my clinical diagnosis of what I'm observing with you and what you're saying is that this is what's happened. That the other issue was that they wanted to send me for a cardiac MRI, which probably would have confirmed it like diagnostically, like on a test. But because I have MCAS, there's a chance that I would have had an anaphylaxis reaction to the dye that's in the test. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of like, look, it's a risk for you and the treatment's not going to change. You're obviously like, at that time, like when I had my relapse, I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs, like crippling chest pain, can't lift anything heavy, can't exert myself. And she's just like, you know, in my, I guess, expert opinion, this is what you're suffering. I'm happy to write this down. This is the diagnosis that you have. It's very much in line with what we're seeing. And, yeah, so that's, I guess, how it came about. You know, somebody quizzed me recently about, you know, how does she know that it's definitely from the vaccine? Like, that's a lot of the thing is like, how do they know that it's definitely from the vaccine? How do they know that it's not from COVID? I haven't had COVID. That's the other thing. Like, probably people watching saying, how do you know it's not from COVID? I don't know why I haven't had COVID. Like, everyone around me has had COVID.
Nice. Well, maybe you're one of those lucky, genetically blessed.
Yes, genetically blessed for vaccine injury, but not
right.
But like, and also because I have to test really regularly for work. I've had PCR tests all the time. I'm not so much now, but definitely back in the day. So I remember one time I thought that I had COVID because I was on tour and the whole band got it. And I was kind of feeling a bit run down and thought, you know, I probably got COVID or whatever. I did three of the, we call them RAT tests. I don't know what you call them in America, the ones you just do yourself. Okay. And then I was like, I better go have the official one because I just need to know. And then that came back negative as well. I'm like, I don't have COVID. I did like three of those and a PCR Don't have
I escaped for the longest time too. But then I finally ended up getting it.
I feel like it's inevitable, you know, and I'm, you know, and now I'm back shooting concerts. I'm touring. I dare say it's inevitable. I think I've just been lucky so far, but like, so, you know, she had said also, you haven't had COVID, you know, in my opinion, this is what's caused it. It's happened 4 days after you've had the vaccine. You were in lockdown for 2 years before that. Like,
well, it seems like a lot of doctors are much more hesitant about, even when they see the symptoms. So this doctor didn't seem like that was an issue.
She was amazing. I think too, so in Australia, and this is controversial to talk about, but I feel like I can say it because a doctor said it to my face. A GP that I went to previously, I tried to get an exemption to get a booster because originally I had thought they were going to mandate the boosters and I was terrified that I wasn't going to be out of work. So I was, and this was before I had my official diagnosis, but my GP at the time was like, absolutely do not get if you get another vaccine, this is going to be very bad for you. But if I write you an exemption, I will lose my license. And she said that to my face. And we had heard, and again, anecdotally, that APRA, who is the governing body in Australia who look after all the doctors, had sent out a warning saying that they were going to suspend people that were writing exemptions. And we had heard of people, doctors that were being suspended. Obviously, in defense again, obviously there was a lot of people that were trying to get exemptions, and probably people that maybe didn't need them for medical reasons. But again, I just feel like these type of heavy-handed ruling where people like myself who genuinely needed exemptions were not able to get exemptions at that time is like unforgivable. Like I don't understand how you would. Thankfully, they did not mandate the booster. But if I had been in a position where I couldn't work because I wasn't able to get an exemption, and people were in that position because there were industries that were mandated. So nursing and teaching and there's different industries that had to have them for particular reasons. So if you were in my position and you were in that industry, you were not able to get an exemption. There was also examples of people that were able to get exemptions and then took them to employees and their employees wouldn't accept the exemption.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like such a clusterfuck of like, you know, these one size fits all. And I get it. Like I get the argument. We're in the pandemic and we've never seen this before and we need as many people on board and all of those things. But like that lack of nuance in certain situations has cost people livelihood, jobs, and sometimes lives. Sometimes people have actually committed suicide over these issues. So this is the stuff that I'm passionate about advocating and talking about because these are the stories that nobody's hearing, that there are real fallout from these decisions that are made in the name of health and safety of all of us that have huge ongoing repercussions that is still happening. People are not eligible for compensation that have lost everything. They've lost thousands of dollars. They've lost houses. They've lost, you know, most of us have spent upwards of $20,000 to feel normal. I've heard stories of people spending up to $100,000. One of the things that works really well for us, especially if you've got any of the heart-related issues, is hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Extremely expensive, but works really, really well. So people are taking out loans and second mortgages and all kinds of things to just get the therapy they need to feel normal after doing the thing that they were told that they need to do.
Right.
So this, it actually, like my whole worldview has just tipped upside down because I was very trusting of government. I definitely thought if something happened, I would be looked after. I remember seeing a TikTok about this and it was really convincing. It was like, you know, vaccines are so safe and we've been studying them for years and it's science. And what happens with science is it's continually moving and progressing. So if something happens with the vaccines, then it's science. We'll just keep moving and we'll find out what the solution is. And I was like, oh, that's so true. And then you're in this situation and you're like, wait, what happened to that thing about science catching up with us and like helping us when something goes wrong? Because that's not happening at the moment. It's only starting to happen now, and we're 2 years in, sometimes, I don't know, close to three maybe for some parts of the world. We got our vaccinations really late compared to the rest of the world. So I don't know how people like me in these communities are going to be able to regain trust after just being so abandoned. I think that's right. That's the biggest message that I have, is outside any of the for and against and all that stuff, I get it. I get all of the arguments, but it's this lack of trust of medical institutions, health organizations. I don't know how we're going to regain that back. And I think that's really, really, really detrimental from a society point of view.
What would it take for you to regain trust?
Whew, that's a big question.
I know.
Yeah, I guess, gosh, just made me emotional. Yeah, I don't know. I think I wrote a official complaint about the nurse recently that I saw, that I think maybe getting a response to see if, like, sorry, it was it was okay. Really hard time. Yeah, getting a response to say we acknowledge that that was wrong probably would help. My new cardiologist, I think she's amazing. My naturopath is amazing. People that just genuinely care and want to help you and don't just say you're a statistic. It's rare. Like, I know it could be. We don't even know how rare it is, but like, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter when you're that person. It could be 1 in 100 million, but when you're that person, it's like your world. So, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, it makes sense to be emotional about it.
Yeah.
When would you... I mean, if you had to be, I don't want you to be in that situation, obviously, but if you were in a situation where you did have to have the booster now, given everything, no. Yeah.
Never again. I am like, I don't know if I, honestly, I don't know if I would get anything again right now. I'm that traumatized.
Yeah.
So now I don't want to put anything in my body at the moment. and like I said, a lot of us feel the same way. Like, it's a very common story.
That's the so trust. Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like you told us this was safe, and that's, I hear it every day. I still hear it on the television every day. To get your booster, it's safe and effective. So like, I'm still hearing it daily. It's re-traumatizing for all of us. It, because we haven't been acknowledged. We're just being cast aside, you know. So it's really hard. And when we do talk, it's not to put people off having boosters or anything like that. It's just to say, when something goes wrong, can we please have help? Can we please have the science and the knowledge to understand why this happened, to however rare you might think this is? We need to know why it happened. We need to stop it from happening in the future. And people desperately need compensation, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's one of the things that I've pretty much given up on. I don't think that will happen, but the knowledge, I think it's possible for the science to catch up, absolutely. And it is happening. It's just really slow. And the crossover between us and long COVID is, it's very apparent. And so like we kind of, a lot of us are being treated like we have long COVID. So yeah, those there's people that have realized and picked up on those distinctions and similarities, I guess. And there's amazing doctors who realized that really early. And we're helping. I found a doctor on Twitter really early who sent me like a page of like, and he's in a long COVID clinic somewhere in Michigan, I think. And he was just like, just sent me a page of like, this is what I think you need to do. You know, like just people like that, that are genuinely wanting to help people and are not just like gaslighting people or where's your proof? And like, that's the thing that like, I understand the people that are really data driven and that, you know, I'm one of those people, so I get it. Like, yeah. What's your proof? How do you know this was the vaccine? And they're just constantly like, they hound you for, how do you know it was this? Like, it's like, they need that definitive, like, joining of the dots. And it's complicated, you know, and I think that's why it's been so hard for so many people to get, like you said, I am one of those rare people that have it on my medical records now, and it's been really hard for a lot of people because the story is complicated. What's really apparent, though, is when you're in the communities, how similar our stories are. And I know the thing about anecdotes and blah, blah, blah. Correlation and causation and all that crap. I've heard it a million times. But our stories are so similar, and there are thousands of us. There are thousands of us. And we're just saying we want to be heard and we want to be believed and we want to be treated and we want to feel normal. We want our lives back. That's it.
Well, that thing that you mentioned, I mean, compensation would mean accountability and accepting that something was wrong. Changing, you know, growing with the science is more to the TikTok video that you were watching, the citing. So yeah. Which would be good to at least get one out of the two, but totally. It'd be nice to see governments adjust. And you look at, you know, a lot of this also reminds me of, you know, something that I sadly learned about very recently, but you know, what was happening to Black women, you know, when they were being forcefully sterilized. So, and that is something that they still haven't gotten over. I mean, still, I don't mean it that way, but it's like, how do you get over that of trice, right?
Yeah. I mean, so, that goes to your question is like, what would it take? And I don't have that answer. I don't know. Yeah. And compensation probably isn't even enough, but it's just like, to have, I don't know, the acknowledgement. I think acknowledgement for a lot of people in our community is really important, and that's what we don't have at the moment. So that's probably the first step for sure.
Yeah. I mean, trust, you know, once you lose that trust, it takes time to regain, if you can regain it, and hopefully you can, but it's not going to ever be an instant thing. It's going to consistency, right?
I was talking to a friend of mine, really lovely friend of mine, and we're talking about the vaccine stuff. And he said to me, what would it take you to change your mind? And I had to think about it. And I was like, I've already changed my mind because I was on your side before. And I've had an experience that's changed my mind now. So it's like actually the opposite question. It's like, what would it take to change your mind? And I think for some people, it is actually a personal experience. And I understand that. I do. I for being on the other side before, I get that it's hard to understand this fully unless you've experienced it and gone through all of those things and had the experiences with doctors and the gaslighting and all that sort of stuff. Some of it sounds unbelievable. So, yeah. But I think just empathy, when people are telling you these stories, and you know, it's just a very human, very real thing that we're going through that is has been very hard. So just believing people when they're telling you, I know obviously there's people that have ulterior motives and people that make up stuff and all that sort of stuff. I totally get it. I get it. I've seen the people on Twitter, I've seen them making up stuff, and it doesn't serve us at all. It's actually the opposite. It really harms our community. But yeah, I guess knowing that there are genuine people out there that are really hurting, and to have empathy for those people for sure.
Yeah, and just like with everything, we can always, you know, discern between, we can use our critical thinking and we can discern between those that sort of manipulate narratives versus those that are telling the truth and are genuine. And you know, you don't need to lump the two together. I think do a great disservice when we do that. So hence like me wanting to listen to your story, because you know, I realize that certainly this is a real thing for a lot of people. Mm. I don't know what the numbers are. I don't talk about, you know,
I don't even think we know. Or,
yeah.
I don't think anyone knows. I don't even know if they're
that's part of the problem. Right. That's part of the problem
we'd
in the first
know.
Place.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We need to be having these conversations. And I mean, that's part of the idea behind the podcast. It was kind of a naturally good fit for it. So that's why, you know, have these conversations. And so I'm really glad to have had this one with you, and hopefully it gives people a sense of a story that maybe they don't see represented as much. And I appreciate you speaking with me and giving your sharing your story and your perspective
and my tears
and your tears. I know, I didn't want to say that. Well, I hear emotions.
No, I really appreciate it. I thank you so much. I said, like I said, I'm such a big fan of your work, and this really does mean a lot, and it will mean a lot to people in our community as well, because our stories have not been told. So we definitely appreciate just having the chance, so thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you. And also I'll add all your links, because you're a fantastic photographer and I'm a fan of yours. And she's like, she's literally a rock star photographer. So this is why she can't, like, she needs to have the energy to do this stuff. Like,
I need to do more covers of Rolling Stone. I need to go and do that. So I need to make that happen.
I love it. Okay. Let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again. Thank you.